Oh, snaps.
The world is finally waking up to the crap that's baked into and sprayed on kibble dog food. No longer can commercial pet food manufacturers fool us with pretty pictures and false promises. This is the raw dog food truth. The view and opinions expressed on this podcast are not intended to replace medical advice. Before starting any raw diet, do research, ask lots of questions, and consult your vet.
Hey, everybody, it is Dee Dee Mercer Moffitt, the CEO of Raw Dog Food and Company, where your pet's health is our business, and we're friends. Don't let friends feed kibble, especially like my friend Neely Piazza, top pet consultant in the country. What up, Neels?
Kibble's crap.
Yeah, we know how you feel about kibble. It's crap. Kibble's crap. I like it.
I love when people start off an email or something and they say, I feed my dog quality kibble. And I write back and say, no, you don't.
You're just spending a lot of money for crap.
Yeah.
No, I had somebody the other day and they were going, I think, camping or something like that. People email me all the time. They're like, I don't want to do raw when I go camping. So what kibble would you suggest? I said I wouldn't, because I'm a raw dog food company, and if there was great kibble, I'd be selling it.
Yeah. Yeah. Why would anybody think that we would say it's okay for, it doesn't make any sense.
We don't want to answer the phone calls that say, my dog's got diarrhea, I just went camping, but I fed him a high quality kibble.
Yeah. Well, but the problem with that is it'd take you half an hour to get him to admit that.
I literally have to say this. What else are you putting in your dog? I mean, seriously. So we're going to talk about this today about, so I had a sweet pet parent, brand new. Okay. Puppy, a big puppy. I think she's going to have a giant dog, like a 160 pound dog. But anyway, dog had gas, had the farty hearties.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay. This isn't high in fat. We shouldn't be having a problem. Sometimes, you know, chicken can do that if it's high in fat and all that jazz with skin on. But finally, what'd I find out? Mixing Honest Kitchen. And I said, honestly, come on now. Pull that out of the diet.
And why were they doing that?
I don't know. There's some sort of conception that real food doesn't have real vitamins and minerals.
Well, neither does the Honest Kitchen. I mean, if you look everything that, I guess that's, let me correct that statement. They have added in synthetic vitamins and minerals, but that's one of the reasons to not feed commercial food in the first place, is to get away from all that synthetic crap.
Yeah, look, synthetics don't operate in the body the way that real food does. Synthetics, a lot of times your body doesn't even recognize it, or it will recognize it in a totally different way. And that's a whole nother podcast, but they're supposed to, vitamins and minerals work like right and left hands, you know, shaking hands. We're partners. We're working together. Well, synthetic vitamins work like two left feet.
Right, exactly. And plus, when you go to adding stuff like that and messing up, it's in messing up what's going on with your raw diet anyway. I mean, if you've got that situated right, which if you've talked to me, you do, then you add that kind of stuff in and you mess up everything. You mess up the whole symbiotic program. So plus it's all carb, it's all starch. And it's been processed and heated. So it's not, and it's more expensive. So when people say they can't afford to do raw, I was like, well, how can you afford to do dehydrated? That doesn't make any sense either. So, I mean, I wouldn't recommend it, but if you want to do Honest Kitchen, then do it. But I can't think of a good reason to do that instead of raw. I mean,
right. So I think I would be guessing, because I'm not inside my pet parent's head, but just from what people say, they believe that they're giving better nutrition by adding this Honest Kitchen.
Well, they're not.
No, no, they're not. I said, I know you can't. So I tell people this all the time. I say, look, I've done the analysis and typically it's, 48% sugar. And they're like, what doesn't list the sugar on here?
Well, of course it doesn't list sugar on
there. Doesn't even list carbs.
No, exactly. Which is what you're talking about. But I went through today and looked at the ingredient list on most of the lines, and all the majority of the veg is like potatoes and sweet potatoes and lentils and peas and carrots, and that's all starch and sugar. So, there's some that have a few good things in there in addition to that, but you still are taking on that huge amount of starch for no reason. And they have added in vitamins and minerals that are not, I just don't see the logic there. And if you're adding that to a good diet, you are quite likely to get farts and gas and gurgles and things like that because it's so high starch. And that's usually what causes that.
Yeah. Undigested food, releasing gases. But just think about it. I tell you what, if you've got leaky gut, if you've ever had leaky gut yourself as a human and you eat sugar, you eat anything that has sugar in it, you are going to be blowing it out your backside. Causes gas.
Yeah.
Gas, and more gas. So I did hear back from this pet parent, and I said, please pull that out of the diet. I think you're going to be fine. Pulled it out. Dog fine.
Yeah, there you go.
Dog is fine. Now, I don't know. I'm going to say this until you guys are sick of hearing me say it. If you are adding anything, to the raw diet that you are purchasing from us or someone else, we can help you with that. But our answer is pretty much going to be the same every single time. Tell us what else is going in the diet. That means dairy. That means supplements. That means treats. So Neely, one of my sweet pet parents the other day came to warehouse pickup food. And my two Germans were out there. And he said, can I give your dogs some treats? I said, well, I will have to know what kind of treats those are. Oh, these are great. These are great.
Mm-hmm.
They were, and they're one of the more popular brands out there in the pet food store. I said, oh, contraire, turn that bag over. Let's look at the ingredient list. And I swear there were 50 ingredients in there.
Oh my God.
Yeah. I said, no can do. Again, you guys, you got to look at the ingredients. Our treats that we have are air dried. That means they aren't radiated with, radiation for shelf life. And there's nothing added to them. They are air dried. And then they stay in the refrigerated section. So turn your bag over. Has anything else in it?
Well, and even if it doesn't have anything else in it, treats are not a trivial thing. Anything that you buy in a retail store that's labeled for pets, you need to be incredibly suspicious.
Yes, be very suspicious. Okay, so we've talked about the Honest Kitchen causing gas. So any processed foods will cause gas. When we talk about bloat or torsion when the stomach twists, especially if you have the big dogs with the big barrel chest, a lot of that, Neely, well, I would say I've never seen a raw-fed dog bloat.
It's incredibly, incredibly rare. And anybody that has horses can relate to this. So it's just like a twisted gut in a horse. So it's, everybody says, well, it's from eating too much and then being too active right afterwards, which is kind of sort of true, but it's kind of sort of not. So what happens is kibble is, it has no moisture in it, right? So the dog will eat that and typically most dogs eat once or twice a day, you know, so they eat a fairly decent amount of that. And then it goes into their stomach and it sits there because it's ridiculously hard to digest. The pH goes up, so they have less acid in their stomach, which, by the way, if you have acid reflux, please do not give acid reducers. It causes any number of other problems, and it doesn't really address what's going on with that, but that's another story. So anyway, the kibble sits in the gut. It sucks all the water out of the dog's body, and it turns into basically a rock. So, and it's like that for hours and hours and hours. And so when they drink, the more they drink more and more and more and more. And then it starts expanding more and more and more and more. And then any wrong movement in that gut twists around. So it's not just the food, it's the water component too. And if you're feeding your dog kibble, your dog is always going to be on a continuum of mild to extremely dehydrated constantly, because the kibble is pulling all the water out of its system.
So we just say, friends, don't let friends feed kibble, especially if you don't want your dog to bloat.
Exactly.
All right. So here is an interesting email I got today. You're going to love this one.
Uh-oh.
I have a question about raw eggs, which is what I give my dog, a holistic vet. Told her friend absolutely no raw eggs, and I'm not sure why. He is holistic. Why not raw eggs? Of course, nobody believes me over the vet. I said to this sweet pet parent, I said, well, here's what we would ask our pet parents to do. Ask your vet to back up what they say. Ask them to tell you why they say it. Maybe they're talking about salmonella. You said maybe they're talking about B vitamins. I said, but if they're talking about salmonella,
yeah,
then I would probably not go to them for nutrition advice. Because if they don't know how to feed a carnivore, you know, they probably, you know, you don't want to talk to them about nutrition. Just let them, you know, do the surgeries and stuff that they do.
Yeah, there's not a good reason to not feed raw eggs. I mean, you don't want to do the conventional cheap kind. The only two things that I can even think of that I've ever heard as an argument against eggs is the salmonella, which the salmonella is on one, it's not an issue at all for the dog. And two, the salmonella is on the shell, not in the egg. So even if they were saying that, then as long, if you don't give them a shell, which a grocery store egg, you don't want to give a shell anyway, because it's been treated and waxed, but the dog could handle whatever was there anyway. They don't have an issue with salmonella. And the other is, some people say that Avidin in the white will deplete the dog of B vitamins, which, you know, if you were just giving them the white, a whole egg is like perfect nutrition that has absolutely everything in it. It's totally complete. So a whole raw egg is like a perfect food. So there's absolutely no reason not to feed your dog a whole raw egg.
Not even if you gave them one a day, you're fine. Jeez.
Yeah. And I've heard stories of, I heard this from Dr. Morgan a long time ago. She had a client that, I can't remember what was wrong with the dog, but she said, well, we need to give him some eggs for a while. So this was a St. Bernard puppy. And this lady was feeding this dog 18 eggs a day. And she had been doing it for like a really long time, like 6 months or a year or something like that. And the dog was totally fine. And Dr. Martin was like, well, I think we can change that up a little bit. But obviously they're not a problem. So, you know, that's a totally extreme example and someone that misinterpreted what she had suggested that she do. But it just goes to show you that it's not a problem.
I think that people read certain things and they don't know, and so it scares them. To some degree, it is not your vet's fault that they don't know.
It is their fault that they don't learn.
What is their fault to poo-poo something that they don't know anything about?
Exactly.
So that's where we're going to fault them. So they should just say, go back to your, you know, raw feeding nutritionist. And here's the other thing too. Somebody, Dr. Jasek was telling me that there are some vets who have like these doctor of science degrees in nutrition. And she said, you know, they're still not raw diet nutrition classes.
Mm-mm. And it's all about calculating energy and metabolizable energy and calories and milligrams of this and micrograms of that and yada, 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 and putting together a mathematical formula of individual nutrients. And that's what academic nutrition is. And it's worthless. I mean, it has no bearing on the way on reality, none whatsoever. So I have a real, I mean, I've taken those classes. They're totally worthless.
I always say, if your vet is not a raw feeder and hasn't been a raw feeder for at least 2 years, a minimum of 2 years themselves, a balanced raw blend. Okay. And you know, I don't like that word balanced, but what I mean by that is to say,
yeah, I was gonna
you know,
say.
I don't like that word, but it
I don't either.
What we're talking about when we say it minimum 10% organ, 10% bone, that's the very, very minimum that you can have. And then your 10% fat and the rest protein. You know, we always advocate increasing those organs and increasing that bone. But let's talk about bone dust versus bone meal versus real bone. So, Neely, you sent me a great article today about bone meal. Now, let's clarify for our listeners. Bone dust is the same as real bone.
Yeah, bone dust is usually what a manufacturer will call what comes off of their bone saw. So, you know, it's like a slaughterhouse that is processing animals, and you know, they have a bone saw, and so it's kind of, you know, if you think about when you're sawing a piece of wood and you get sawdust, so it's exactly the same. It's just you know, basically finer particles. So that's what most manufacturers will call bone dust, is what they've collected from their bone saw. Volume wise, you're going to have, it's real hard to kind of wrap your brain around if that really is enough or not.
Yeah. How do you calculate 10%?
I don't know. I honestly really don't know how you would go about figuring that out, other than if you had an analysis about the actual mineral levels were in a certain, you know, in like 1 gram, and then you knew how many grams were you know, what the concentration was throughout the bag. That's the only way that I can think of that you could see, and then you could look at the actual total amount of calcium and phosphorus and magnesium and all that kind of stuff. But that's a whole heck of a lot of work that I'm just not interested in doing personally. A bone meal is a whole different can of worms. So that article that she was talking about that I sent was from a agriculture magazine. They're talking about rendering and how, you know, the slaughterhouses have all this waste that from processing animals, that if they were to fill it in landfills, it would be overrun really fast. So they've come up with this wonderful way to use these non-edible, non-human grade leftovers, which are all the nasty bits and parts. Basically, the rendering process is cooking and then pulling the fat off. And then they, you know, they'll take the fat off, but then they'll add fat back in, but a more controlled amount of fat back in, and it's cooked. So it's all ground together and cooked. And When it's meat and bone meal together, it's all that stuff together. If it's just bone meal, then it's supposed to just be the bone, but it, you don't know what animal it's from. And I can guarantee you that it's not just bone, because they're not taking the time to skin those things. They're just throwing all that crap in there. I mean, that's how bags and collars and tags and euthanasia drugs and all that other stuff gets into dog food, because they just throw it all in the hopper when they render something. And it's disgusting. And this article actually was trying to make it sound like a great thing. And I almost threw up reading it. And it was all, and it was sugar coated too.
They do this heat treatment to reduce moisture content and to eliminate any microorganisms. Well, that's what we don't want, either one of those.
That's where I was going, is this is bone that they're cooking and grinding. So a bone meal is going to be a cooked, processed, rendered product that is going to be non-absorbable because it's cooked. So bone meal, you need to stay away from.
All right. So our number one is going to be real bone. Okay. Our number two, right, is going to be bone dust. Again, a little iffy on that. We would suggest you go ahead and give your dog some real bone, because bone is meant to work synergistically. We did a video today of Lassie. She was eating the bison knuckle. Did you see how big that thing was?
Yeah, it seems as big as her head.
Yeah. And so she's a pretty aggressive chewer. So we just wanted to see, and it really did slow her down. She slowed down. She enjoyed herself. A lot of people get really confused about bones, Neely. So they're like, well, what kind of bone should, you know, my dog eat? Well, I always say it depends on what you're looking for. Are you looking for recreational or consumable? Consumable are going to be those softer bones. They're going to be the rabbit. They're going to be the poultry, and then the beef. So the hardest bone that we have is going to be the bison. And the hardest bone in the body of an animal is going to be the travel bone. So anything that they're going to walk on, the knuckles, the femurs, those weight-bearing bones. And you don't want your dog to chip a tooth. And, you know, a lot of dogs are just going to go to town. They're not going to think about their teeth. That's going to be very expensive if your dog chips a tooth. So also, Neely, what would you tell people about the size of bone for their size of dog?
I say either go way too big, or if you're really worried about it, then make it way too small. So if they do swallow it,
they can call you.
It's not going to be an issue. It'll go... Well, I mean, if it's small enough and they swallow it, they're just going to swallow it. It's not going to cause an issue. But it really ultimately depends on the dog. Every dog is going to have a different chewing style and a different, like we were talking several weeks ago about Henry, how he would just swallow the drumstick whole and I have to hang him upside down and shake it out of his mouth. But that, so, you know. Corgi size head and chicken drumstick, probably not quite the right ratio there. but, you know, the rest of them, you give them a drumstick and they would eat it, just they would crunch it down and eat it just fine. But for some reason, Henry just thought he needed to swallow it whole. So it totally depends on your dog. And, you know, if they're like hardcore, really going at it and chewing hard, you don't really want them to like we're talking about cracking teeth, which that's going to be, you know, that's a risk with anything they chew on. But the weight bearing bones are going to be harder. And a lot of people will say, don't give them marrow bones because they'll break their teeth. Well, some dogs might and some dogs might not. So you kind of have to learn your dog. And when they're first learning how to eat bones, you need to just be sure you watch them and until they figure it out. Once they figure it out, it's usually fine. I mean, I mine get bones in their crates and I go back an hour later and we're like, okay, let's go. So, but you know, they grew up that way and they know what to do. So,
Right. So it really does depend on your dog. So Neely's advice is this: either a bone that is bigger than their head, or a bone that they can swallow. Because It is a raw bone.
I think rib bones are great because they're usually pretty soft, but they're going to be more a consumable, digestible bone, but they will get to a point when you get further up where they're harder and bigger, and some dogs are not able to eat that, but I would 100% supervise that when they get down to that last bit.
All right. Now, other issues that I want to talk about today is joint pain. And we have a lot of seniors in our customer base, and a lot of pet parents are concerned. They want to give their seniors some relief without using pharmaceuticals. We do have a supplement called Green Eggs by Four Leaf Rover, one of your favorites. What is it about the green eggs that's so great for joint mobility?
It has greenlet muscle. It has eggshell membrane. It has curcumin, which is the active ingredient in turmeric. It has a mushroom in it too. So all of those things are anti-inflammatory. They're all joint protective. My older dog is on it.
And you do jump for joints too, right? You do both?
Yeah, I do both with her. She gets the green eggs in the morning, and then usually a couple of squirts of jump for joints at night. But she's 14, and corgis have real tendency to end up with hip problems. And so I have noticed that she is a little bit more mobile, and she didn't used to do this. She's just started doing this the last couple weeks, is she will like stretch now. She can put her front feet out and do the little downward dog thing. And she started doing that. And that to me says that she's feeling more limber and a little bit more range of motion now.
Jump for joints. You spritz that in their mouth. You kind of do a couple of pumps in their mouth. Some people say their dogs won't allow them to do it, but all you have to do, even if they keep their teeth together, you just raise their lips up. And if you, the back of the jaw, there's an opening there, and just squirt it, you know, really fast, four times. I think it might be easier on the bigger dogs to do that than it is on the smaller dogs. But I did have someone ask me today, can I just squirt it in the food if they won't let me put it in their mouth? This is for the jump for joints.
That depends on who you ask. So the purest, the classical and pure homeopaths will say no, that a remedy needs to be given in a clean mouth, and so that, you know, they've not had anything in there for at least 15 minutes and don't have anything after it for 15 minutes. But realistically, it's an energetic it's an energetic medicine. So it just needs to come into contact with the mucous membrane. So, you know, you, like she said, you can just lift the lip and squirt it onto the gums or into the pocket beside the teeth. And most of them, it tastes good. So most of them like it once they taste it. They just are, some dogs are so used to being pilled or medicated or something, they don't want you doing anything like that. And Angel, she'll let me do it, but sometimes the pump will do a little whiff and it'll hit her like in the back of the throat or something. So that's kind of startling sometimes. So the other thing you could do is just use a eyedropper rather than the pump, and then just drop it in there. But back to the, can you put it in the food thing? Some homeopaths will say that if that's the only way you can get it in them, then that's fine. and others will say, don't do it that way. But I guess I would say, try not to do it that way. But if that's the only way you can get it in there, then do it that way and see if you're noticing a benefit. And if you're not, then figure out another way to do it. Most dogs, if they'll let you touch their face, which I would hope that your dog would let you touch his face, would let you use an eyedropper in there. It's the air pressure behind that little spritz, I think, that most of them don't like.
So let me ask you a question. You can't OD on all of this joint supplement stuff?
A natural whole food product like the green eggs or the Jump for Joints, which is a homeopathic, you're really not gonna have that issue. I mean, it's just food, right? So it's all just food. I mean, the four ingredients that I listed in the green eggs, that's all that's in it.
So let me ask you this question. All right, so we've got the homeopathic, we've got the you're not gonna OD, this is all just food. But there are some people that really want, or maybe their dogs need something stronger. Is there, I hate to ask this question, is there a pharmaceutical for pain? There's going to be some real, you know, side effects to these. But if you have a 14-year-old dog, right?
And you're just trying to keep them comfortable. Yeah. Well, so here's what I know about the most common drugs used for pain are going to be Rimadyl, Tramadol, Medicam, Gabapentin. I know. And there's one other one that Prevacox. Tramadol is an opioid, and the latest things that I've seen on Tramadol say that it really doesn't work on pain. It just makes them loopy and knocks them out. Gabapentin was a human drug that didn't work. They gave it to the vets and didn't tell them that it didn't work, but they've used it for any number of things. They use it for seizures and for pain, and I've seen it used for anxiety. I see dogs coming on gabapentin for a whole laundry list of stuff. It's basically worthless too. Rimadyl, Prevacox work, but you're gonna end up doing, one, you're gonna be doing organ damage, and two, you're gonna be degrading your cartilage too, which is ironically what you're trying to alleviate the pain from, right? But you know, if you have an old dog that is really sore, can't get around, and is probably not going to live much longer anyway, then sure. I mean, it doesn't, you know, it doesn't really matter if you trash their kidneys or if their cartilage degrades, because they're not going to really be around long enough for it to matter. But that's a kind of a personal decision that people have to make.
But the best of the worst of those. So Tramadol, no good. Gabapentin, no good. You're looking at Rimadyl, which is a tough one.
Yeah, I know. I mean, you know, personally, if my dog was so painful that it had to be drugged up to function, I would say it's time to think real serious about what you're doing.
Well, the first thing that you got to do if you're listening and you're not on a raw diet is, if your dog has any type of arthritis, if your dog has any kind of joint pain, you got to pull all the processed foods out of their diet. I'm amazed at how many people talk to me and tell me that they have dogs that have joint problems or arthritic problems and they're feeding a kibble. I'm like, well, you do understand that this is one of the major problems, because we hear all the time, oh my gosh, my dog couldn't walk, my dog couldn't get up. And now that I've pulled the offending foods out of the diet, I've put a raw diet, a pure raw diet, a diet without synthetics or fillers or any of that other crap. And their dogs are running around feeling great. So that's the first step. But by the same token, we do have, you know, some raw feeders who, you know, they've just got some really old dogs. You know, one of the oldest dogs in our group was an Aussie. He was 20. The next oldest was a Rottweiler, 18. That's amazing. But if you have questions that you would like for us to answer here on the podcast, join us here. And just remember, here at Raw Dog Food and Company, your pet's health is our business. And what, Neely?
Friends don't let friends feed kibble.
That's right. We'll see you guys next week.
Bye.
Oh, snap.
Find out how you can start your dog on the road to health and longevity. Go to rawdogfoodandcompany.com, where friends don't let friends feed kibble, and where your pet's health is our business.
Just snap.